Hi there. Welcome to Sound Healing Radio. This is David Gibson. And our guest today is Eileen McCusick. Hi, Eileen.
Hi, David.
Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'll give a full introduction in just a bit. Our intention for the show is coherence, that everybody might be coherent in their heart and in all aspects of vibration in their system from now on forever. That's all. But before we get started, I want to tell you about some things that are happening at the school here in San Francisco and online. Of course, the big thing we have happening is the Sound Healing Conference, where Eileen is speaking. And we have also Ellen Amanis, who is has done a movie, I forget the exact name, it's like the Power of Music, I think it is. It's for NPR, and it's an amazing movie of all the research that's going on in the field for sound and especially music as well. And so she's going to be talking about that at the conference. We also have Gary Buchanan, who has been gifted all the frequencies from the Germans during the war, for actually putting frequencies on the body, really powerful frequencies. We sell them as CDs here. And so he'll be speaking. We've got also Elizabeth Gramsch, who is a specialist in working with children and sound, and also on the Tomatis effect, which is from Alfred Tomatis, who did some of the main research on the ear and how learning disabilities come from problems with listening. And about 30 others. We have music going all day. We have groups doing sound healing music throughout the day. We have two rooms. And probably the coolest thing is we're right on the ocean in a national park just north of the Golden Gate Bridge here in San Francisco. So it's a spectacularly beautiful place. I mean, there's often owls and deer and all types of animals all around this place. So it's September 24th to the 26th, and we also have lodging there. You can stay at the YMCA there for only $30 a night, but you'll be sharing a room if you want a room on your own, and then it would be $120. And then meals are very inexpensive as well, and it's all organic, and you can get special have special requests for meals as well if you are vegan or anything. And so you can find all the information at globesoundhealingconference.com. That's globesoundhealingconference.com. And there's also a early bird discount if you pay by this Tuesday, August 2nd. And there's also still exhibitor booths available if you happen to want to exhibit there. So that's, again, September 24th to the 26th. We also have our classes coming up. We have our certificate and associate degree program starting again on September 6th here at the Institute. The certificate program is three nights a week and some weekends, and that goes until December. And then that's the first semester of the associate degree program, so you can continue if you want. And it's all about how sound affects you physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. We also have the classes online. You can actually just start on Tuesday as our next start time, Tuesday, August 2nd. It starts about every 2 weeks because we have ongoing enrollment for the certificate and the associate degree online. And that's Tuesday and Thursday nights, 6 to 8 p.m., and Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. San Francisco time. And it works really well online. If you can't make it out, it's actually really, really great how well it works here. We've got about 24 instructors total in the degree program between these between the classes here and the ones online. So you get a wide perspective of everything going on in the field of sound healing, about how sound works with voice and a full range of musical instruments, including bowls and tuning forks and didgeridoos and a lot of electronics as well that we use as well, if you're interested in that aspect. We also have our audio recording program starting September 7th here at the Institute, where we teach you how to run Pro Tools or any other program like Pro Tools and how to use it to record, produce, and mix and create music that affects people really deeply and record it. And that's happening, again, September 7th, a couple of days a week. And we also have the online version that starts about every 2 weeks as well, and it actually works quite well online. You can find all that information for the classes at soundhealingcenter.com, soundhealingcenter.com. We also have an event coming up Friday, August 12th, with it's two things. It's a gong bath and a crystal bowl concert. The gong bath is with Lisa Lippincott, and I've seen a lot of gong baths. And I tell you, there's none better than Lisa Lippincott. She really takes you in the zone and really creates a lot of like whale sounds. There's no banging. She totally, it's really quite unique what she does. And then Carrie Wilson and myself will be doing a crystal bowl concert afterwards with the Alchemy Bowls. And just really kind of dove into them big time and found some really cool combinations that where we'll be taking people into different brainwave states with binaural beats and then to profound states of peace with a combination of bowls. And that's Friday, August 12th, 7 to 9 p.m. Of course, we still have our store here, the Sound Healing. It's at soundoflove.com. We've got about 60 bowls. We've got all types of things there, including all our sound tables and sound lounges, which are really effective for us. Anything neurological, especially good for PTSD or fibromyalgia. And then we also have our treatment center here at soundtherapycenter.com, where we have about 15 different treatments, and a lot of those are online, so we can find your soul frequency and vibrate you into you. We can also do a voice analysis and find out what's wrong with you and then give you frequencies to balance that out. We can do voice healing. We do tuning forks, and one of the funnest things we do here, the most profound, is massage on the sound table where you're being vibrated for an hour and a half inside and out. And so that's at soundtherapycenter.com. You can also call me at 415-777-2486. It's 415-777-2486. Or email me at david@soundhealingcenter.com. So Eileen has written, oh my God, I'm sorry, I'm not prepared. What's the name of the book?
Tuning the Human Biofield.
Eileen, I met Eileen quite a while ago, and she has written this book that's really kind of become one of the main books about tuning forks, for using tuning forks on auras or subtle bodies and much more. And so she's going to be speaking at the conference and also doing a post-conference workshop for 3 hours on Monday, September 26th. So it's really highly recommended. And so welcome. So tell us about how your background and how you got into all of this.
Well, I started doing massage therapy back in 1996, and I've been interested just in health and wellness in general, really probably since I was about 18. I started reading self-help books and that led to things like Carlos Castaneda and Tony Robbins. And
I took a whole course in college on Carlos Castaneda.
Nice. Yeah, he was very fascinating to me when I was 18. Mm-hmm. So that all of that kind of reading just kept going. And, I realized that I was really interested in holistic healing. Considered becoming a naturopath, but didn't want to go to school for 12 years whatever that was going to take to be a doctor. So I just decided to start with massage, even though I knew that I didn't really want to do that, you know, in the long run. And I had gotten, I had read a book, I'm pretty sure it was John Bowlby's book, about healing with color and sound and music, or, you know, back in the 90s. And it was so compelling to me because I had recently kind of come across quantum physics and the concept that everything is vibration. And I remember thinking, well, if everything is vibration and I'm vibration, then treating vibration with vibration is just, it's very logical. It's just a very sensible thing to do. And I tend to be very, almost extremely sort of logic driven. So I just read everything I could find at the time. And then I got a catalog in the mail that had a set of tuning forks for healing in it. It was the harmonic spectrum set. And so I got them just sort of on impulse, and I started playing with them in my massage practice. And really from the very first day I started using them, they were just so curious to me. I thought if you activated a tuning fork and put it near someone, it was just going to be an input. You know, it's going to produce an objective sound, and it was just going to sound like it was going to sound. And what I found was as I kind of moved it around the body in a kind of exploratory sort of way, I found that the sound changed, that it would go sharp or flat or full of static or noise, you know, loud or soft. Like it was sort of surprising, and it seemed like that there was a correlation. Like if someone had pain in, let's say, their shoulder, and I held the tuning fork over that shoulder, it might sound sharp. But if I kept on introducing it into that area, after a little while, it would sound more pleasant and balanced. And then the person would say, wow, like all my pain just went away. So that was really interesting. You know, so I developed this little practice of finding spots that had static or noise or were atonal in any way and sort of hanging out in them until they harmonized. But I also found like that there were certain areas that were loud. And I remember thinking, well, if it's going to sound loud anywhere, it should probably sound loud over the chakra because that's the energy center, right? So if it's an energy center, it should have more energy. And so I equated the loudness with energy. And I discovered that I could actually use the tuning fork kind of like a magnet might move iron filings. Like I could find these loud spots, like maybe something like over the left hip. And I could actually sort of hook into it with my mind or intention and drag it towards the chakra. I called it click, drag, and drop. It's very much that kind of action where they kind of click on it and drag it and then drop it in the chakra. And then it wouldn't be loud anymore over the hip. It would be loud over the chakra. So that was what I did. And I stopped doing massage very quickly, actually, it was because people would come back the next week and they'd say, wow, I felt so great after you used this tuning fork. It's like, do that again. So that's I switched to it. And I did it as a hobby for about 10 years. I owned a very busy restaurant, and then I owned a specialty food business. And, you know, when I would tell people that I was using tuning forks for healing their chakras, you know, in Connecticut in the mid-90s, you can imagine the kind of response that I got. So it's actually kind of embarrassing. You know, like I had clients and people that would find me, but, you know, just sort of talking to the general public about it, I was actually really uncomfortable because I found that people just, you say the word tuning fork and people would have this like knee-jerk response where they would somehow people have been programmed somewhere, like think that tuning forks are woo-woo. There's just something about it. So, you know, but for me, it's a curiosity enough to kind of do it as a hobby. And then in 2006, I made a discovery that really changed everything. It was a very accidental discovery. But I found a loud spot about 3 feet away from someone. And which I thought was very odd, but I picked it up and I dragged it and I dropped it into the chakra. And the symptom that it had.
You said you found a wet spot 3 feet away?
A loud spot.
A loud spot?
Yeah. Am I breaking up?
No, you're just a little low in volume on my phone.
Oh, okay. Yeah, a loud spot. You know those loud spots that I kind of got in the habit of centering? I found this loud spot, you know, 3 feet away from a person's throat chakra. And I brought it into the body, and, you know, there's like this feeling like it gets, like, sucked into the chakra. And it feels like it's, like, gets redistributed back into the body. That was sort of my perception.
What do you think is going on when you drag it from an area into the chakra?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Well, you know, I had to really think a lot about this because when I found these loud spots out off the body and I started moving them, the outcomes of my therapeutic interventions became dramatic. You know, because I'd already been, like, reducing pain, reducing anxiety, you know, just helping people to feel better, kind of get unstuck mentally or physically or emotionally. But once we started, like, working, and I ended up working about 6 feet away, you know, I just started exploring after that first incident. And over the course of years, I discovered that there was actually a pattern of information storage around the body. So...
Did you discover that yourself, or did you read all the books from Barbara Brennan and everything as far as the different auras and stuff?
Well, I had read all that, you know, but what I was finding was actually different than the sort of gradations of subtlety. I was finding a vibrational pattern of like memory. So, for example, if I'd be working on somebody and I'd hit a loud spot, this peculiar, I have this sort of gift, I guess it is, what I call my mail slot, M-A-I-L slot. It's like this little mail slot, it's like there would be in a door, except it's in the back of my head. And it opens and notes drop in. So, you know, I'd get into a loud spot and the mail slot would open and a note would drop in and it would say, sad, age 12. And so I'd say to the person, well, what, did anything happen to you when you were 12 that was really sad? And they'd say, oh, yeah, that's when my mother died.
So you're doing kind of an intuitive thing with it as well to figure out this, it sounds like.
Yeah. Exactly. In the beginning, it was all intuitive. Mm-hmm. And what I discovered was that every time I found a story that was sad, it was always off the left shoulder. And every time I found a story that was about guilt or shame, it was always off the right hip. And I also found that... And ages related to, like, gestation or birth or earliest childhood, I was finding it the outer edge of the field, which always kind of showed up around 5 feet away from someone. It felt like there was, like, a boundary there, you know, like more charge somehow, like the edge of the field, the container of the field. And so information that was out there was, like, early life, and information I found close to the body was current or recent. So it seemed like, you know, as we go through our days, we're just kind of generating waves of everything we think and feel and do is a vibrational movement. And so...
You know, it's interesting. What I talk about in my book is actually when you're harmonizing, you know, a lot of people talk about the parts of the body being off-key, although I've come to believe it's not so much off-key as it is more a... dissonant or chaotic vibration, kind of like a static, almost like a buzz.
That's right.
And
static.
So
exactly.
when you talk about actually putting the forks, so we'll go ahead because it sounds like what you're doing is harmonizing that static. But it sounds like you're doing more because also I talk about as opposed to just doing frequencies and harmonizing, there's also a flow of energy. And so you're moving, so it sounds like you're moving with flows of energy as well, right?
Yeah, no. That's exactly it. So there's this process when we find these areas of static distortion resistance in the field, they're actually related to a very specific event or memory or time period, you know, some kind of place where our nervous system just got, you know, cooked from stress. And so that record of our nervous system, of our life history, I found in these, like, standing waves around the body in this very specific anatomy and physiology. And so over the course of, you know, a number of years, this whole sort of what I call the biofield anatomy map emerged. Which is just like, you know, just like the brain is compartmentalized and different parts of the brain do different things, the field is also compartmentalized or stratified and then also timelined. So, you know, if you had a traumatic incident with your father at a particular age, I could go find that exact spot in your field where it was, find the static that's there. But there's noise in the signal, but there's also trapped energy. And You know, what is that energy? That's what I've been wondering. You know, we can call it chi, but from a Western mind, and I have kind of just like a natural scientist, philosopher's kind of mind, like that word is inadequate. So, you know, I've been kind of on a quest over the last five years.
I think it has two things. You can look at it from a sound perspective, or you can look at it from a music perspective. In the sound perspective, it's like a dissonant chord. It's just frequencies that are not working well together that are creating a dissonance. Or it can actually be a static, which is actually no vibration. It's actually a vibration that's not actually vibrating, or it's kind of incoherent vibrations.
Right, it's actually snow.
But that's from the sound perspective. From the music perspective, then you can also look at it as a blockage of energy that's stopping the flow.
What is the energy? That's my question. It's like, yes, I understand that there's waves that are like information, but then there's also this sense of actual resistance. Like when I'm training students to do this, and they do this process that I now call field combing, where you're moving the tuning fork from 6 feet away in towards the body, when you hit these pockets of chaos, there's also a feeling of resistance. And sometimes it's so strong, it almost feels
like you're standing on the wall. When you say resistance, you know, what do you mean by that? Because in physics, the only resistance there is, because I was a physics major at UC Berkeley, the only resistance there is a blockage of the flow. You're not talking about a resistance from the person's mind where they're trying to resist, are you talking about a resistance from the mind where they're resisting dealing with it?
Yeah, it's both, right? Because when we have traumatic experiences, we tend to resist them. We tense up. We don't breathe, right? So there is a kind of, like, energetic resistance around the trauma. Like, people talk a lot about fight or flight, but what I find in the system all the time is freeze that comes from the resistance we go into in these traumatic experiences. But the feeling, the sensation in your fingertips as you encounter this, you know, when you're moving slowly, is that it feels like hitting a wall. And if you're really tuned into it, you'll actually find that you can't move it. Like, you'll hit this pocket that is stuck. And so what we do in biofield tuning is I call those hangout spots. You just stay, you keep introducing the coherent frequency. The body becomes self-aware of its own incoherence, and it spontaneously auto-tunes. It releases the tension from the physiology, maybe from the mind, and, like, will tune itself. So all the practitioner has to do is find these areas. Now, once the chaos resolves out of the signal, it seems like the energy that's stuck there becomes liberated and then can move.
That's
the last spot that I moved.
Because you said the chaos is resolved. What do you do, though? Do you just put the tuning fork on that area and let it vibrate, or do you actually create movement, so move in the hand to actually create a flow?
So I might be 4 or 5 feet away from the body, and I'm just holding an unweighted fork in the field. So all we're doing is really providing the body with a reflection. No, we're not moving it. We stop and stay. Okay. It's kind of like if I needed you to give me an E so I can tune an instrument, right? You'll be able to give me that E because you're in tune and I'm not, and I'm going to take a few moments listening to it over and over again in order for me to find E on my instrument. So it's the same thing. It's like the tuning fork keeps giving the body a coherent signal, and the body keeps listening to itself and going, oh, that's not quite right, and it auto-adjusts. I mean, it's really miraculous and elegant the body will make use of this.
Now, do you use specific frequencies for specific issues or specific areas of the body? Or is it more the coherence of the fork?
It's just about the coherence of the fork. And this is what is also really interesting, because at one time in my practice, I used up to 30 different frequencies through a session. But then I went through a period where I was actually wearing forks out. That's a long story. I'm not going to go into it right now. But I kept basically breaking my tuning forks and ended up having to have, like, specially made ones and all of that. But at any given moment, like, I would be missing forks because I had broken them. And I discovered kind of by accident with that, too, that I didn't need all those frequencies. That if I just used a few, then I'd get the same outcome. So Now in my practice, I only use basically one fork. I use 174 hertz, which is the lowest frequency in a 9-piece solfeggio set. It's not about like the frequencies you use. It's about putting a coherent signal in the exact right area of noise and static and stuckness in the field for the right amount of time.
Right.
And then the body will make use of that.
You know, I wouldn't doubt that there could be specific frequencies that would be better, at least, you know, low or high, you know, as opposed to, because the solfeggio is kind of a unusual frequency anyways, because it's just a number that came from doing numerology on the Bible. You know, it's not ancient or anything. It's only 30 years old.
No, I don't have, you know, all the stuff that they say about the solfeggio set, I don't necessarily believe or disbelieve, but having used a lot of different frequencies over 20 years.
But I've always really talked about when I teach tuning forks that actually the most basic thing about a tuning fork is its consistent frequency, and that the frequency is not as critical as a lot of people think.
I'm back.
Yeah. You know, I was just saying while you were gone that, you know, in my classes, and I'm really careful about this because a lot of people are really adamant about it, I always tell people when I teach tuning forks, I say, you know, the most basic thing about a tuning fork is its consistent frequency that's providing coherence. And the frequencies all aren't that critical, although, you know, to say that in this field is a little dangerous. So.
Well, I concur with you absolutely, and that's what I tell all my students. I'm like, you know, I know like 139.2 hertz is the frequency of a healthy kidney, you know. But
oh my God! I have to tell you. I just met a woman that called just a couple of days ago, and she said she's like tied into this ancient group of beings that, and she was very grounded. And she said, "Oh yeah, that God is at 3 cycles, and then at the 23rd dimension, which is a super high frequency." She said, "There's angels, very specific angels that hang out at different frequencies. At 432 hertz, there's a specific group of angels that hang out there." And she went through in detail the different frequencies. So there's, you know, there's this whole realm that could be going on that might even take what you're doing to a whole nother level. I'm sure you're probably open to it if it shows up.
Yes, I'm open. I'm very open. I wouldn't have come this far with tuned forks if I hadn't been open and curious. So,
the way I think of it is it's like you got like a buzz and you're simply stopping the buzz. You know, because you know in physics, one of the most basic laws of physics is a powerful frequency or a strong resonant frequency will overcome a weaker and entrain it into the stronger. And that's the most basic.
Yeah, so that's what it is. It's resonance and entrainment, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Yeah, a coherent frequency will overtake an incoherent frequency. So, people...
Go ahead.
No, really, go ahead.
So I was going to say, are there different... are about how many layers of distance do you have? Like you said 5 feet, and then is there like how many different layers are there around the body that you've discovered that are different, have different information?
That's a really good question. So I note 3 different gradations when I go in. So the first one is, you know, when we enter into the field itself, so there's a definite sense that there's a barrier that's about 2 inches that seems to have more charge or density. And then I go into what feels to me like pretty much all the same density up until I get it to be about 10 inches away from the body. And that's what I call the 10-inch zone. And it's as if the magnetic field becomes stronger there. The atmosphere around the body, you know, has a different property. And then there's what I call the 4-inch zone, where the magnetism is so dense that we actually don't even really work within 4 inches of the body, because
the first one you said 2 inches. Did you mean
2 feet? No, ten inches.
Well, you said 2 and then 10, then 4.
Oh, what is 2 inches is at the very outer boundary of the field. So that's 5 feet away from the body. There's like a 2-inch density of what feels to me, what I would call like, is the same as the ionosphere around the Earth.
The threshold.
Yeah, the threshold, the boundary.
Okay.
So that has a real density to it. And you can really feel it. It's very easy to find. You know,
you're talking about 10 inches and then like right, give or take an inch or so? That's what I'm understanding.
Well,
like that's the 2-inch boundary.
I'll do it again. So 5 feet away from the body.
Oh, 5 feet.
There's a
you didn't
band.
Mention that before.
Yeah, 5 feet away from the body, there's a band of density that's about 2 inches wide. And that's
the outer membrane of the aura.
Yeah, it's like our bubble.
Okay.
So there's that, and then it's pretty much the same up until I'm about 10 inches away, and then it gets more dense. And then 4 inches away from the body, it gets super dense.
Okay, interesting.
That's what I've observed. There's
one thing that's really interesting is that Barbara Brennan says that the cathartic template or causal body, actually did a whole class on auras today. In online class, is actually about 3 to 3.5 feet away. And she thinks of that, often think of that as your soul frequency, where there's information going on of your soul that will actually heal the lower layers. But do you do most of your work out at the 5 feet level more so than the 10
inches?
Well,
we start 5 feet away. And then, so I work in different regions, because I got started in this chakra model, right? So, but then after working on people's major chakras, then, you know, they'd say that they weren't grounded when I was done. So then I started working on the feet and then the knees. So now in a biofield tuning protocol, we might start at 5 feet away from the left foot and then comb in towards the foot. So it's a process of what we call combing, which is sort of picking up any stuck energy, moving any stuck spots, you know, sort of harmonizing as we go. There's a feeling of like sweeping up energy as we're going, and then that gets dropped into the chakra. And, you know, there's a minor chakra in the foot. And then you go up to the knee and comb in at the knee and then the 7 major chakras. So you're
when you say combing, is that kind of like moving the fork across the area?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you do move the fork.
Sweeping. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, you don't just
so
put
it's
it on
a journey
you
every.
Move it.
Yeah, exactly. So you're just kind of going through the field. It's like a field combing or grooming, you know.
Okay.
Resolving the static and getting the stuck energy to flow, bringing stuff back into flow.
And so keep going. So you do.
Yeah, well,
feet
so then you
then
just you keep going.
Legs.
You can then you know you finish at the foot and then you go to the knee and you start 5 feet away from the knee and then head on in. And so what we find is when we find these areas that are really stuck or really dissonant, that sometimes I mean they're obviously all related to specific memories. Some of them won't necessarily move if they're not witnessed in some way. So I find sometimes it's helpful for me to talk to people and say, well, you know, in the biofield anatomy map, this particular area relates to unmet needs. And, you know, when we get into this sort of birth and infancy area way out at the edge of your field, there's a lot of agitation and upset here. You know, do you know your birth story or your infancy? And then if they remember, they'll just kind of say the story of like, oh, yeah, my mom couldn't breastfeed me because she got really sick and she was gone and life's chaos and blah, blah, blah. And that's a really formative experience in their life, you know, that early stage that then sets up a pattern of being frustrated over unmet needs, like, through the rest of their life. And so that early chaos just continues in the field in that particular spot. So I'm really able to, like, read people's history, you know, and be like, I can tell you the personality of your mother, you had a head injury when you were 5, that you've got a mild spasm in your left hip, that you have arthritis in your right shoulder. Because
how do you teach people to be that intuitive?
Well, the map really helps, you know, because I have what I call a biofield anatomy map, which is actually like a diagram that you can stick on your wall in your office.
Uh-huh.
And you can be like, okay, you know, because it's really age-wise, it's really equidistant. Like if you're 60 halfway through your field holds information when you were 30. And this is consistent across thousands of people that I've worked on, this timeline aspect. And then the emotional aspect, if I'm on the left side of the solar plexus, this is all the history of your relationship with your mother and the energy of your mother. So I can tell you about your mother's personality, the ages you had a hard time, all of that is in this particular strata of your field. And so, you know, students can look at the map when they find stuck spots and they're like, okay, well, this could be this. But the tonal changes are like surprisingly obvious. They're not subtle. They're really loud. Like when you get into an area in somebody's adrenal history where they were like maybe sideswiped or rear-ended suddenly, there's actually a tone. The chief work will make a tone that sounds like alarm. It will have this really high, sharp quality to it.
I missed that. You said there's a tone you actually hear in the system?
Yeah, you hear it. You can hear like shock or alarm. You can hear sadness. Like it almost sounds like a minor third in music. The overtones and the undertones of the tuning fork like bend.
I'm confused. You're saying you're hearing it through the tuning fork, or you're hearing it in your ears?
No. Well, the sound being produced by the tuning fork.
I'm sorry.
Sounds to my ears like in a particular way. Like in a sad memory.
Is it coming through the tuning fork, or is it? Or is it, are you hearing it in the aura?
Both. Like, hearing it from the tuning fork. The tuning fork is interacting. The tuning fork is like a needle on an album reading the history of your life. It's like reads the soundtrack of your life. So when the tuning fork is in a memory that's sad, it produces a sad sound. And I can have 20 people, 20 students in a room, and everyone will hear it and go, that sounds sad. The changes that it makes are dramatically obvious. Like it's which is wonderful for the person on the table, because you know this work isn't so different than like healing touch, where people wave their hands around and find blockages in the field. But that's pretty far out for a lot of people. But the tuning forks, when they find those stuck areas, the tone changes immediately. And so, you know, like if someone has depression and I'm over their left shoulder, this undertone kicks in, this kind of whoa, and you can hear it. Like the person on the table can absolutely hear that. And when I say to them, that's a tone that I have learned to associate with people having a sense of depression or heavy sadness, is that something you can relate to? They're always like, yeah. So
are you hearing it as an actual timbre or a tone, or are you hearing it as music?
Well, you know, I have to tell you that I'm not a musician, and I was told that I was tone deaf. You know, I had to take singing lessons for 7 years before I could finally sing on key. So when you talk about, like, is it a tone or is it a timbre, it's just to me.
No,
like,
I'm not asking a tone or timbre is the same thing. All a tone or a timbre is a sound. Is it
a sound
or is it music playing? Because music has time to it.
There's no music. It's just the tuning fork.
Because you said you heard musical intervals. If you're hearing musical intervals, then you're hearing, so you're not hearing over time. You're actually just hearing the two musical intervals together at the same time. I'm just trying to visualize what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, just from a very basic perspective, it is that there are these standing waves in the field that are there, but they're inaudible. But when those inaudible waveforms intersect all of the overtones and undertones of the tuning fork, it causes a change in the sound that the fork is producing. And everyone hears it the same way.
Okay. Yeah, because there's not many overtones in tuning forks, so you're just hearing really subtlety.
I have forks specially made for me that actually produce a lot of overtone. It creates a very rich, you know, there's a lot of depth to the sound and a lot of nuance.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have to be intuitive and psychic to do this, you're saying?
Not at all. In fact, I've trained almost 500 people in this method, and I've only ever taught one person who couldn't get it. And he had been shell-shocked by his wife, who told him that she didn't want him to be going to competition with me. So he had like a mental block around it. But everybody else, I mean, my students are always like universally surprised and delighted that they can feel the resistance, that they can hear the dissonance, that they can move the energy, you know, that they can create pretty profound state shifts for people. You know, is being able to go back into the history of someone and actually work on in the nervous system, on birth trauma, on things that happen like under the age of three that are so formative and that our conscious mind can't get back to. One of the things that we do is called an adrenal rhythm reset. And we worked on someone in class today. I'm in San Diego teaching at the moment, whose mother's husband had been diagnosed with cancer and was undergoing cancer treatment at the same time that this woman had a colicky 3 months old and a toddler. And the mom was so stressed, and her adrenals were running like crazy when she was pregnant with this person. So in my student's field, in the gestation area, the outer edge of the field, was adrenal chaos. And that was really evident. And so we go through and we just kind of work with the fact that the adrenals are running too high and too fast. The rhythm is just off because they've been, you know, stressed basically since conception. And so when you lock phase with the adrenal rhythm and the tuning fork, just introducing that coherent frequency, the adrenal becomes self-aware. And
how far away are you on for the adrenal?
How far away? Well, the actual field of the adrenal itself, if you extend your arm out to the side, it goes about 3 or 4 inches beyond that. The adrenal throws a pretty big field. And so, you know, you work with it. You get in its field, you focus on it and listen to it, and it will actually ratchet itself down. It will go out of being in this elevated state, and it will bring itself back into its factory setting, its coherent rhythm. You know, we've got all these people out there who have all this adrenal stress, and they're taking supplements, and they're taking this and that, but really what we need to do is fix its rhythm. And you can do that. You can fix an adrenal rhythm in 15 minutes with a tuning fork.
And so
after we did this with this woman, she said, "I'm so quiet inside. Like all that noise of that screaming adrenal has just been like shut off like a switch."
Have you done any research where you've got people hooked up on devices to see? Because it sounds like you could be able to show this very, very clearly.
I've done a whole bunch of research, and I'm looking forward to sharing that at the conference, actually. We've done work with photon counters, with medical thermal imaging.
I'm sorry, with what?
Medical thermal imaging.
Wait, how does that work?
Well, medical thermal imaging measures the surface temperature of the skin. So I worked on a person who had really blocked sinuses. And in a medical thermal image, that shows up as the color blue because it's sort of stagnant and its temperature is what it's measuring. So we took an image, you know, of her when we started. And then I did about 15 minutes just working around her head, getting the energy that was stuck around her head to move. And then we took an image afterwards, and you can absolutely see the difference. The GDV, we've done a bunch of work with the GDV doing before and afters. We've done heart rate variability monitors. I've done some brainwave stuff. What's really neat about this work is that it does produce very profound state changes in people. I mean, you receive a session, you feel really different afterwards. And so it's really fun to play with measuring devices before and after because you see a really dramatic shift. And
yeah,
I'm
it'd be
not
nice to really do
like all this.
MRI and like really, really get some really serious data. It'd be very
yeah,
cool,
that's
huh?
The next thing. You know, we're actually about to set up a lab, and one of the things on the wish list is there's this new brain scanning technology that this company in Colorado has come out with. It's like next generation, better, smarter, faster brain scanning technology. because I'm really interested in seeing, like, when we get into this first trauma memory, where is that lighting up in your brain? You know, when we get into this difficult relationship with your father that you've had all your life, where is that lighting up in your brain?
Yeah.
Because I understand the anatomy of the field so well, I think it would be very useful for brain mapping.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think for me, part of the, like, telling people that I work with tuning forks and getting over the sort of embarrassment of the airy-fairiness of that has been I discovered that I have this passion for quantification. And so looking forward to just, you know, throwing more numbers and more hard data at, you know, this is what happens when we introduce coherent sound into the system. These are all the changes that take place. And really taking a good hard look at how and why, and, you know, what's the science going on here?
So what are some of the other stories of people's healing? What are some of the more profound stories you've had of people being transformed?
Well, one story that I often tell, because it's just a really good example of a lot of different parts of this work, is that I had a woman come to me who had depression and anxiety, and she had really bad anxiety. She'd had it her whole life, and she'd been on and off medications and, you know, in and out of different kinds of therapies, and really nothing had helped. And within 5 minutes of her lying down on the table, I'm 5 feet away from her right knee, and there's mad chaos out there. And I said to her, did you have an extremely traumatic birth? And she said, oh, my God, yes. Like, my mother almost died. I almost died. Like, the whole hospital was, like, in an uproar. And I said, okay, well, this is your problem. Your very first stress response, you bored out your tachometer to 9, you know, you redlined. And so now every time you have a stress response, you just go over the top, because that's just the way that the wires got laid down. Those early neural connections were just super intense stress. And energy flows along established pathways. So I had to hang out in that spot for a long time. I think probably in that first session with her, I must have spent a half an hour, 5 feet off of her right knee, just introducing the coherent, you know, tone over and over again, because her whole nervous system had been built on that chaos. And so there was a lot of unwinding that had to happen in the system. But then finally, there's always this feeling of, like, the stuckness kind of letting go, and then you can start to move in towards the body and take the energy that was stuck there, or that soul fragment, and reintegrate it back into the system, put it back into flow. And she came in the next week and said, my anxiety is diminished by at least 80%. And now every time I have an anxious response, I know where it came from, and I'm not beating myself up for it, because she had gotten into a lot of, like, self-blame and self-attack for not being able to get a grip on her anxiety. She had no idea that it went all the way back to birth, and that pathological oscillation, that crazy chaos, was just in her system all the time. And so we have this sort of almost magical way to go back in time and, like, pinpoint that exact pattern in the history and in the record of the nervous system, and actually change the way the body references it and relates to it. And so after just 3 sessions, this person who would, you know, be an anxiety medication patient for for whenever, you know, she said 95% is gone, and I just can't believe it, and I healed my relationship with my father at the same time, and, you know, just really extraordinary transformation, because we figured out, you know, the right place to treat. It's really different than, like, getting a sound bath with bowls, you know, because if you're just receiving a sound bath, it's helping to settle out those waves for the, you know, for that moment or for a little while afterwards. But then those dissonant places are just going to reform. They're going to reassert themselves. But when we go in with a tuning fork and hang out for a half an hour in that one particular spot, it's never going to reassert itself like that again.
How much do you use intention?
Well, intention and attention, I think, are, you know, really key components in the mix. one of the experiments we want to do in the lab is to have an auto-resonating tinny fork on a robotic arm, just to see, like, do these patterns show up without the compassionate, intentional witnessing of the practitioner? Do they resolve without, you know, another being completing the circuit? You know, is it just the physics of resonance and entrainment, or, you know, how much is the mind and the will and the heart of the practitioner as well?
So you don't set, you don't do specific energy work for an intention, to set intention. You just have, like, just basic compassion and positive intention.
Yeah, because we've found with this work that it isn't about me as a practitioner having an intention to do anything. We just ask what's going on in the system and what wants to happen, and how can we get underneath that? How can we, you know, the intention is to serve the body with whatever it's trying to fix in itself. So the intention is always coherence, you know, supporting coherence, supporting flow, and paying attention. I mean, just listening deeply to someone for an hour through this medium is alone healing for someone. You know, people always say to me, this is so validating. Nobody's ever seen this much of me, so just to be seen, to be witnessed, to be heard, especially in these areas of deep old pain, that witnessing alone is an incredibly powerful healing experience.
So what are you going to be, what's your workshop at the, you're going to do like a presentation in the conference, and then you're going to do like the post-conference workshop. Tell us about what it will be like.
In the post one?
Well, both.
Sure, or both. Okay, well, my first presentation on, I think it's Saturday that I'm talking, I'm going to talk about some of my research, and I'll talk a little bit about the overview, the basic biofield anatomy hypothesis, sort of how that all came into being. And then show just some of the data that we've compiled. And I'm going to talk about the research projects that we have coming up, too, which are very exciting. And then our workshop, I'm just going to show people the basics of this combing process that we do, you know, talk about how, you know, most people use tinny forks sort of over the chakras or over the body. But if you wander 5 feet away, you know, they're also really useful, and in a lot of ways more useful out there. You know, it's certainly been my experience.
And, are you going to have forks for everybody?
I only discovered that. What's that?
Are you going to have forks for everybody to practice?
I probably would ask if people have forks that they bring their own, because I don't, I won't. I'll be able to pass some around, but
okay,
not for everybody.
So you're not really practicing too much. You're really just talking about it.
No, more demonstrating. It would be more of a demo.
Cool.
Yep.
Cool. So what do you see for the future of this?
Well, that's a really good question. Several things. One is that, you know, there's really in the consciousness circles, because in addition to obviously becoming interested in sound, this sort of working around the body and working with what I feel is the mind, made me start thinking a lot about consciousness, trying to understand the medium of the biofield or the energy field. You know, is it magnetism? What is this? Trying to frame it is a very difficult thing to dive into from an academic and scientific perspective, because scientism claims that there's no such thing as a human energy field. And research into those realms has kind of been verboten in this country from an academic and scientific standpoint. So to try to find scientists to collaborate with in my quest to have a better understanding of the science and physics of what's going on in the field, it's been kind of hard. But fortunately, I have found a team of PhD scientists who are, you know, are champions of biofield research, and I'm working with them. So the first thing that we're doing is we're creating a proof of concept study. Eileen claims that our body is actually inside our mind, rather than the other way around. and that our memories are magnetically stored in standing waves around the body, that's a really big claim. So how can we test that claim by using a scientific method to investigate it? So,
you know, at Tucson University in the psychology department, they've got like a $30 million lab where they've been testing energy healing for the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm, Gary Schwartz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gary's been at a couple of my conferences.
Yep.
He's no longer there, apparently.
Okay. Yeah, I just saw him. I spoke at the Electric Universe conference because this is another piece of my work is Electric Universe theory and how that fits into this idea of the magnetic bubble around the body. And that's a whole other subject. And I'll talk a little bit about that as well at my lecture, just kind of a brief introduction to see how it all ties together. Gary actually endorsed my book, which was wonderful. And I had kind of hoped that, you know, there, when I read what he was doing, but that was back in 2004, he got a grant and was studying Reiki. I don't think that they're doing it anymore. So we're just going to be doing this independently. You know, we're going to set up our own lab and do this research independently. And then that is a preliminary step. Then the next step is to create a device that translates, that can actually read these frequencies that in the field that we're reading with the tuning forks. We want to create a device that will read them and turn them into an image on a screen. So just like they use sound, right, ultrasound, to create an image of what's going on in the body, and that's all just based on bouncing sound off of it and then, you know, translating that through a software program into an image, we want to create the same thing that does it in the field.
Cool.
Because seeing is believing, you know,
so
very much
can,
in our culture.
So how can people get in touch with you?
I have a website. It is biofieldtuning.com, and that's biofield is all one word, tuning.com. And there's a contact page. My email address is there. We sell tuning forks. I had to have super high-quality tuning forks made, so I sell some of the best tuning forks you can buy, and instructional DVDs for the method as well as my book. So that's all there at that website.
Cool. Cool. Great. So thank you for being here and sharing what you do, and thanks for doing what you're doing, because I think this is kind of like the tip of the iceberg for the whole world of sound healing, and it's really to move into the whole realm of energy fields and realms that aren't normally, you know, explored by science is really really, you know, so good work. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you. Yeah. It's exciting. It's fun. I'm very grateful to be able to do it.
Cool. And so again, we end with our intention of coherence for all at every level, coherence from all. So all the past is now harmonized, and that we all will end up on this planet in a coherent fashion so that we're all at peace and able to manifest and be whatever we're meant to be from our higher selves.
Mm-hmm. I like that thought. Thank you, David.
Thank you. And thanks for listening, everybody. Take care.